You're listening to 1485 Radio Today.
60 Plus is brought to you by Methodist Homes for the Aged.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to 60 Plus, your very own retirement program. My name is Estelle de Toy, and I have with me in the studio Anna Bezos, a physiotherapist of profession. Welcome, Anna. Anna was trained years back in Cardiff in Wales, and when she came to South Africa, she worked for many years at Sandringham Gardens Old Age Home. But currently, she is the clinical specialist at Life New Kensington Clinic. Anna, tell us more about the clinic.
So Kensington Clinic is an inpatient rehabilitation hospital in Kensington, and it's part of the Life Healthcare Group, who have several rehabilitation facilities across the country. It is caters for those persons who, after accident, injury or illness, cannot go home initially and therefore are able to obtain intensive therapy, be it physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, all the other disciplines, dieticians and doctors, in an inpatient environment, catering predominantly for those persons who've had a stroke, a traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, post-fracture, but also many, many other illnesses and incidents that don't allow them to go home initially post acute hospital management.
And I suppose you've got a whole range of specialists, multidisciplinary.
We have all the therapists are there, and we have a full-time doctor who's on board, social workers, psychologists, dietitians, and obviously full-time nursing care.
Great. Anna, when we look at the elderly population, which elements are common with them that you can help as a physiotherapist?
I think the things obviously that sort of spring to mind initially are, and the ones that we see in our unit, and I know often the ones that are referred into hospital, are the acute injuries, such as particularly fractured femur following a fall, but also the more degenerative conditions, such as osteoarthritis, the effects of osteoporosis, which is common as we get older, the chronic effects of things like rheumatoid arthritis, and then perhaps some of the more neurological conditions, such as post-stroke, Parkinson's disease, which tend to occur more commonly in the aging population.
You were talking about falls, and that is our biggest risk in our retirement villages. But why is it that when we get older, we tend to fall more?
I think it's as they like to say, multifactorial. So I do think one of the things that we know is as we get older, we are gait patterns, the way that we walk, tends to change, so we don't always pick up our feet enough. That in itself leads to falling if we've got small rugs and loose carpets and poor-fitting shoes.
And all elderly have those.
Absolutely. Our balance reactions deteriorate, sadly, as we get older. So in the younger population, if they perhaps stumble or get maybe pushed a little bit, you're able to put out your hand or take a couple of little steps to save yourself. In the elderly populations, those reactions are not so quick and are not so secure. So that's the other one. Things like changes of blood pressure. Often somebody says they got up suddenly in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. Yeah. Your blood pressure is quite low. You don't have time to adjust, so you fall. We lose muscle mass and muscle strength as we get older. It's a natural part of natural aging. And if we don't regularly exercise, we don't have those strength and those muscles to help us to get up. And then very basic things such as, you know, have you cleaned your glasses recently? Are you able to see where you're going? Have you left the bedside light on? Often people fall in very familiar environments, doing something that they've done time and time again, and lose a little bit of concentration, or perhaps don't hear that somebody's called them and they turn around quickly. So very rarely is it doing something unusual. It's often hanging out the washing, getting up to go to the bathroom, or falling over the cat, which has been lying in the same place for the last 5 or 6 years.
So it's everyday activities that...
Frequently, yeah, not always, yeah, but certainly those are often when I'm asking patients, how did you fall? They'll say, I was so silly, I did, and it's something that they've done time and time again. Yeah.
What can the older person do to prevent falls? And is it only a physiotherapist that can help them? Or in our care units, the nurses, will they be able to help them?
I think everybody has a role to play. So I think that there is a certain amount of responsibility that the older, fitter person can do in terms of looking after themselves, exercising, trying to keep their musculature strong. Appropriate footwear, I think, is very
That's
important.
Very important.
And so making sure that you have shoes that fit, and not just because they're comfortable because I've been wearing them for 10 years and I can slop around in my soft slippers. So that might be something that the podiatrist, another professional group, can come in and look at footwear and feet, actually, not just footwear. As we know, occupational therapists are significantly involved in assessing environments for safety. So, as we've said, have you got a carpet in the way? Should you be moving a table somewhere else? Are the floors too clean and shiny and slippery? Mm. Are there non-slip mats in the bathroom? Are there grab rails? Are there correct lighting? And the nurses and the caregivers, be it in the home or in the community, also have a role to play in looking at that safety.
Identifying
the risks. Mm. And being firm enough to say, you know, we need to make some sort of changes. We need to modify the environment to make it safer for you. Let's leave a little light on in the passage at night. Let's move this rug, and I know you like it, but maybe let's hang it on the wall if you still want to see it. Let's buy you a new pair of good fitting shoes, those sorts of things,
I know what we use in our units is we do a full risk assessment with the residents that come in to see. And one of the factors that play a huge role is also medication.
Yes.
Most of our elderly are on sleeping tablets or calming tablets.
Yes.
And that can actually also cause a fall. So for any person that use some medication like that, I think that should be a red flag, that your risk to fall is actually higher than the other person.
I would agree with you. And many, many elderly people tend to over-medicate, and quite frequently, particularly when they're in the home environment, self-medicate, and can get a little bit drowsy, a bit disorientated, and that, I would agree, is a huge risk.
Mm.
And I think also for some of them, there becomes a pride thing. You'll suggest that maybe using perhaps a walking frame or a walking aid might not be a bad idea, and they'll say, no, I'm fine. But there are times, I think, when it's appropriate to give you something to make life a little bit easier and to make you a bit more secure.
I remember my mum was one that she would use the walker in her flat, but whenever she went outside, and that's where also a big risk was waiting to happen, she would feel too proud to use the walker.
I think that's why they invented shopping trolleys. I'll often say to people, but I don't want to use my walker out. And obviously it depends a little bit where you go. But if you're going to want to go shopping to the mall or go to meet somebody, pick up a shopping trolley. And nobody's going to query it, and it gives you that little bit of security. And I also think it helps to give you a wider berth because people have to walk around the shopping trolley, so you can sort of clear the way.
Yeah, that's a clever idea. I also read on the internet that Tai Chi might help with the falls.
I think I've done a little bit of reading, and once for my own interest attended a Tai Chi class when I was working at Sandringham Gardens, because there is quite a lot of research to show that the movement patterns that you use in Tai Chi, which are very slow, very controlled, increase muscle mass, and they also increase coordination, which is very important. So I think it's a very nice form of exercise. It's low impact. It isn't going to keep anybody shortness of breath. You do require to be able to stand and balance, and therefore it isn't something that's going to work in a very inactive person. But I do think it's a very nice form of exercise, and certainly something that someone should consider.
When we started the conversation earlier, we spoke of hip fractures. Once a hip replacement was done, what will the next step be?
So most persons, after they've had a hip fracture, they may have had the actual hip joint replaced, or they may just have had a nailing of that bone, depending where it is. The majority of doctors like to mobilize early, provided the fracture has been well secured. If they're very worried, if it's a very osteoporotic bone, or if perhaps there's a previous fracture, they might say, listen, you're not going to be able to stand on that leg for a period of time. But ideally, you want to get up and moving as fast as possible. So the physiotherapist is going to be there to help that person strengthen the muscles around the thigh joint and the knee joint, get you up on your feet, and grading the exercise program according, depending on age and any other comorbidities. We usually use a walking frame to start with because it gives that stability and confidence. But ultimately, most persons who were otherwise well should be able to get back to full functioning within probably 8 to 12 weeks, depending on their age and the severity of the fracture and say length of stay that they've had to be in hospital. But the idea is to get you up on your feet again
as soon as you can
and to regain the confidence. A big problem is you fall and you're scared and it's too and that families need to understand that it's very, very frightening.
Yeah, no, definitely. Listeners, if you have any questions for Anna, please feel free to phone in on 011-880-5839, or you can SMS your question to 44008. We're going to take a little break and listen to "These Boots Were Made for Walking," sung by Nancy Sinatra.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah, and what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
The Methodist Homes for the Aged provides affordable, secure, and caring accommodation and services to the elderly. We offer a wide variety of accommodation options in secure retirement villages, including rental units, life-right units, frail and mid-care. We also offer specialized care for residents with Alzheimer's and dementia. Plan your retirement now. Contact us on 011-787-0330 or visit www.mha.co.za. At Methodist Homes for the Aged, people are our most important asset. Call 011-787-0330.
You're listening to Radio Today. This is Johnny Clegg.
Welcome back to 60 Plus, where I'm talking to Anna Bezos about how physiotherapy can improve your quality of life. Anna, at our care units, we admit a lot of residents after a stroke. Very often the family can't cope at home. The person needs 24-hour nursing care. What is the possibility of such a person recovering completely?
In general, particularly in the much older population, full recovery after a stroke is unlikely. Most people are left with some residual deficits. They might be quite mild, possibly a weakness of one arm or the leg, perhaps some cognitive deficits such as some memory loss or speech, poor clarity of speech. However, some of those deficits can be very, very significant. Whilst there are ways of getting some idea as to how the recovery process is going to be, the more recovery you see in a very short period of time, the better the outcome is going to be, where the stroke has occurred, the type of medical care they got when it happened. Most people have, say, some residual deficits, which can vary significantly from person to person, but can be quite catastrophic and results in significant burden of care for the carers. However, intervention by the full rehab team early on can improve those outcomes and can also give perhaps better insight and awareness to the carers into how to cope, how to manage, how to handle the type of equipment that can be made available to make life easier and to give them a better understanding of what the person who's had a stroke is going through.
And apart from the physical problems that this person can experience, I suppose the emotional is huge. For a person to lose their independence must be devastating.
You've come to sort of a big T-junction and life has changes significantly, and it's often a very catastrophic event. So a stroke tends to be very, very sudden. There's no preparedness for it. So you can be absolutely fine sort of at breakfast time and be in hospital after a stroke by lunchtime. And it does impact significantly on the person who's had a stroke. You can have depression is very, very common post-stroke, and emotional changes. That change in role from somebody who perhaps was a carer themselves and now requires caring for by the daughter or husband or other family members.
And I've seen a lot of patients going through the whole grieving process, because it's like you said, it's loss. It's loss of so many things. So it's the same as with a person, if you lose a spouse or a friend or somebody, it's something quite significant that happens in your life. Strokes are very common in this age group. So what are the warning signs of a stroke?
There are several, and they can be remembered by there's an acronym that we say call FAST, and that is FACE. Have you got some droopiness on one side of the face, a bit of slurring of speech? Does one arm, it's usually one side, feel weaker, numbness, pins and needles? Has there been a loss of speech and slurring of speech? That makes up the acronym to act fast. But then other signs may be confusion. There may be a very rapid onset of one-sided weakness with loss of consciousness, and really somebody who requires complete resuscitation. So it can be very mild, and that might be what we call a transient ischemic attack, or a TIA, which resolves after 24 hours. But that is a stroke, and it cannot be ignored. And one of the problems is that people said, I had a bit of numbness on my face, my speech was a bit slurred, my fingers were a bit tingling, but it went away. You need to follow that up, because that's the warning sign. And with medical intervention, it may be something that you can prevent the second stroke, which may be a much further catastrophic event.
So you also don't need all of these symptoms. You might just have one. When you suspect that somebody or that yourself is having a stroke, what should you do?
You should take them to hospital. You should not wait or phone your GP. You should try and identify. We are beginning in South Africa to develop specialized stroke units where you will have on call, a neurologist and a radiology department who are ready to do scans, and the nurses are aware of the treatment that becomes available. But they are at the moment still in their infancy, but you should go to hospital and say, I think I am having, or I think my family member is having a stroke. We need to act now. You don't wait to see if it gets better. And I think that's the important thing. It might improve, it might be a TIA, which might get better, but that's your warning sign. A stroke is not going to get better by itself. It could well get worse. And with appropriate and timely intervention, you can actual fact have some pretty good results.
And please tell us about the app that's available. Nowadays, with smartphones, we're becoming so clever.
Some of us are. Yeah. Yes, in the last sort of year or so, Boehringer Ingelheim have decided that they need to focus on stroke in this country, and they have developed an app which can be downloaded. You can find more information on My Stroke website, and that will allow you, if you have the correct app downloaded, to see information as to where your nearest stroke unit is and how to access that. And via the My Stroke website, it gives you a lot of information about stroke, where stroke units are being developed in this country, what the warning signs are, and some of the questions that you should ask and may be asked if you have a family member or a loved one who you think has had a stroke or is having a stroke.
And I was just thinking, is there certain risk factors that a person have that will give you make you more aware that you are at risk to have a stroke?
Yeah, there are many, many risk factors. The most obvious ones are hypertension, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, inactivity, obesity, too much alcohol, poor diet, so if you have a diet that's really just full of fat and unhealthy foods, in this country there is a link between HIV and stroke, although there's not a direct risk, but there is definitely a link. So it is very multifactorial. In some population groups there is definitely a tendency to have strokes more commonly, and also in they do say that sort of people who live very stressed lifestyles, personality strokes, personality may impact, but that's also possibly because those persons with that type of lifestyle may not eat healthily, may smoke, may do a lot more drinking. So there are many, many risk factors, and you need to look at them all very carefully.
You've just made me very worried, because I think now you've described the majority of South Africans.
We have a very high incidence of stroke in South Africa, and it's resulting to many, many more people being admitted into hospital and many, many more people requiring long-term care, which has quite a financial impact on families and the health system as a whole.
And one of the other problems that we have in this age group is different levels of incontinence. This is usually such a sensitive matter, and most residents are reluctant to talk about it. Incontinence is largely preventable. What can one do to improve your bladder control?
It's a difficult question, because, as you say, a lot of people don't talk about it and sort of battle on with it as their own personal problem, but it does impact on their lifestyle and on their quality of life. There are physiotherapy techniques, there are various exercises that you can do, particularly for women, that can help improve control of the bladder in terms of the musculature. In men, they are not quite so easy to administer. And then, of course, one has to be aware of the other risk factors for incontinence, such as chronic urinary tract infections and, in men, prostate problems. So I think it's being aware and then eliminating what is the possible cause. And if the other physiological causes are excluded, looking at exercise, making sure that you are balancing your fluid intake with your fluid output, and management. I often tell my patients that don't drink an awful lot after 6 o'clock at night if you're battling in the evening. Empty your bladder before you go to bed. If necessary, set an alarm for 3 a.m, which is a bit tedious, so that you can empty your bladder and not suddenly wake up in the middle of the night with this terrible urge to go to the toilet, and that's when you need fracture your femur at the same time. But for some people, it does become a very difficult problem, and then you would need to use urinary devices. uses a pad or something like that. But I do think it's important to exclude anything physiological. A lot of the elderly have chronic urinary tract infections, and a lot of men have prostate problems which go unrecognized and can be treated and have a significant improvement on their on their urinary function. And then bowel incontinence is another story altogether and should be fully investigated, because that may be due to some pathology which can be managed but is best not left unattended.
So you would say if you have an incontinence problem, bowel or bladder, rather go see your GP, let him do tests and make sure there's nothing
physiological. And not to be afraid to talk about it. I mean, an awful lot of young people, particularly women, have problems with incontinence. So it's not just the population of the elderly. And if you talk to a lot of your friends, you know, they will have similar issues. It's not something not to be ignored.
Is it also true people that stay active for longer have a lower risk to become incontinent?
Probably not necessarily so, because there are, particularly with women and childbirth and things like that, that tends to possibly encourage or can encourage urinary incontinence. But yes, because your muscular system is so much better, and the muscles around your inner thigh are much stronger. So yes, being active is good. Whatever we're talking about, being active is good.
So if the reason has got to do with the muscular system,
you can retrain that. But if there is a physiological cause, as I say, something like a urinary tract infection or something else, that requires some intervention.
And I know physiotherapists traditionally only had a few methods to treat a patient, but I know there was quite a lot of advancement in that area. What different treatments can you use?
Oh, it's very, very varied, and each physiotherapist has a lot of bows to their armor. So it can be very traditional exercise, electrotherapy that we all know of, heat and ice. Therapists do acupuncture, therapists use relaxation therapy. There are various types of strapping and taping for management of pain. It's very varied. And I think that if you need to consult a physiotherapist, you need to discuss with her what treatment she can do. And each of us have those that we tend to favor and works well for us. But I think that you need to go open-minded when you see a physiotherapist. Make sure she's obviously registered, preferably a member of the South African Society of Physiotherapy, and to ask and not to just go and be passive in your treatment.
Anna, where can the listeners contact you if they need to?
I think that would be best if they contact via you. I don't have my own practice, so I do work for Life Healthcare, but I am very happy if they email you
and forward things on to me,
and with pleasure I will try and give advice or point them in the right direction for somebody obviously closer to home.
All right. Listeners, you can contact us on 011-787-0330. I repeat, 011-787-0330, or you can visit our website www.mha.co.za. Take care, keep moving, and goodbye. Goodbye, Anna.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
When I get older, losing my hair, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?